Welcome to the Off the Road Again podcast. I'm Chris.
I'm Ross.
And I'm Nathan.
And this is our podcast about anything and everything off-road. We literally have been all over the place lately, which is kind of fun. This is more right in our wheelhouse, so this is perfect.
Oh, yeah.
As always, we're socially distanced. It's the only way we can do the show. We used to not say we were socially distanced. We just did the show, but then like social distancing became a thing. But I'm still in the Midwest, Ross is in the Northeast, and Nathan's in Idaho.
In Idaho, that's right. Whew. Idaho Falls.
Idaho Falls. To Google Maps I go.
Are the Chuckers still there?
The Chuckers, yeah. How do you know about the Chuckers?
So I don't know if they still are, but the Idaho Falls Chuckers used to be a minor league affiliate of the Kansas City Royals. And so
yeah,
have been a number of times I've heard about players down in Idaho Falls, but it was, I mean, like down on the farm system, the minor leagues. You guys, for me, up, you're north. But yeah, and it was... Now that's going back a ways. I don't even know if they're still affiliated, but yeah, I was like, we have a team in Idaho.
I kind of think they are affiliated, but yeah, it's a great little team, and they play a lot of games throughout the summer. We actually go a fair amount, not a ton, but a fair amount. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was looking it up real fast to see who they're partnered with, because that's the one thing about minor league team is they can change affiliations, which means all of the players disappear and then new players come in.
Ooh, magic. Yeah, it used to be with the Padres, at least when I was younger. I think it's the Kansas City Royals, but I don't know, to be honest. I don't follow it that
closely. I'm trying to find only, it so fast. I'm good at Googling it. I suck at this.
Non-professional league team around here that matters is the Danbury Thrashers, which was a hockey team that I think they existed explicitly for the purpose of getting into fights. Like there was very little actual hockey being played.
You know? I feel sad now because they stopped in 2020.
Oh, in 2020. Oh,
well,
they went independent in 2021. They are not affiliated with anybody.
So. Independently. Anybody, huh?
Yeah.
But the guys that want to play pro but haven't quite gotten there are on their way out.
But yeah, Royals from 2004 to 20, Padres from 95 to 03, Braves from 86 to 94. See, like they change affiliations. Wow. It's so weird.
Oh yeah, they're
crazy. Around.
Once you get down to the lower levels.
This is the first time we've talked about baseball on this show.
Talking about baseball and hockey.
Yeah.
Give me a little bit of time. I'll drag in some Chiefs references here. Actually, the only time on the show we've ever talked about football went absolutely horrible for me.
Oh really?
Because it was the show
football then.
Yeah, well, it was the show right before the last Super Bowl with the Chiefs and Tampa Bay. And I was so confident in the guest. I don't remember who the guest was, but he was like, Tampa Bay's got you, and they got us. So
yeah.
Now I don't know if that's a personal superstition or not, but I'm not gonna talk about it anymore.
That's that's why we don't talk about F1, because it's a sore subject these days.
It's over.
There you go.
It's over. Not for the better this season.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen there.
God.
It's only like 2.5 months away.
Yeah. It was 100 days when they ended. Yeah. So
the season's so long.
Mick Schumacher now to Mercedes. And here we are, off-road show talking about professional, you know, tarmac racing.
It wouldn't be the first time.
Right.
Crazy. Crazy. So, so I don't have any real personal updates on my side. I don't know if we talked about this. We went to Newport, Rhode Island. We took a Kia Carnival. It was pretty spectacular. It's just a good van. I mean, you know, the one we had was like almost 50 grand, but it made the amount of stuff that we bring for me, my wife, and our 6-month-old comically small in comparison to how much space there actually is. It's got those crazy like second row jet pie, you know, the private jet seats that recline all the way. But well, good car.
First of all, stance wise way better than standard minivans. Like it's got a little more ground clearance. It's not a ton.
The design brief was basically make it look not like a minivan, and it is successful. Also that crazy like C-pillar blade like it's the first time that a blade like that has been successful since the first gen Audi R8.
Yeah.
But good car, a really good car. I mean, you know, there's like some downsides. Like we only averaged 23 miles per gallon and most of the trip was highway, which isn't great considering it's front wheel drive and, you know, a V6. And
is there an all wheel drive option? There's not. Yeah.
Not.
That's the downside here.
That's the only drive. other downside.
Same V6 as the Telluride, right?
It's basically this, it's basically a minivan to Telluride. Like the interfaces are the same. It drives basically the same. You just sit a little lower and it's got a little wider on its haunches, but good, really good car.
Sam looks so comfortable.
Yeah, and it made getting the car seat in and out so easy compared to like even the Lexus, you know?
There are reasons that minivans exist.
Yeah, we were really, 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 really spoiled, you know, just with like 2.25 people's worth of crap. It was like, oh, yep,
2.25.
Yeah. But yeah, other than that, the only other update is after much deliberation, it more likely than not, we're going to keep the Lexus.
Yay.
Yeah. Thank Nathan, God. So, you know,
good choice.
I have a GX 460. I've had four forerunners.
Five forerunners.
I'm at too many forerunners. So
I thought
you
had as many forerunners as fifth gens.
God, I don't even know. but yeah, so I've had this GX since last November, and obviously, you know, a lot of partners on board with this build so far, Iron Man and Life Force and Toyo and Motegi, Wheel Pros and Warn, and Midland. So I think the Lexus is going to stay.
I hope so.
It's not perfect, you know, like it's the gas mileage is dog shit, but like realistically the only place I would go from here is like a Tundra with a 5.7 or a late 100 or very early 200 series Land Cruiser, which the gas mileage is worse. What'd you say?
Sequoia.
Yes, or Sequoia, yeah.
Which it's right gas, in between all of those.
The gas mileage is worse.
Yeah.
None of them are really better for the trails around here because they're all bigger, and the trails around here tend to be tight for even a 4Runner. So I think that Lexus is going to stay. I wish it wasn't black. That's like my only...
Wrap it.
You know how much wrapping a car is now? Dude, wrap... To do a good wrap around here is $3,500 for the lowest of the
that
low
seems
quality.
Very reasonable. I don't know what the issue is.
Because $3,500 could do so much other stuff for this truck.
That's true.
So that's it.
But if it also alleviates you from being angry about what color it is, then it's actually increasing your mental well-being.
It's not
money well
anger
spent.
About what color it is. It's more just like I know there are swirl marks all over it because I don't know the first thing about detailing, and you know, like trail rash doesn't exactly look great on a black vehicle, so yeah. I don't know, whatever, it is what it is. I might do something.
I feel like you've got options,
TRD accents or something, but yeah, the next step conveniently for this episode is probably sliders and skids. So
Nathan's head snapped immediately.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah.
Good one.
I got questions. So yes. Nice. That's all the stuff on my side. And Chris, what's that? Anything?
I remembered my
tropical
update.
Jungle of a place you're living in this screen right now.
Yeah. Well, you can see that obviously my background does not match the background of this photo. I remembered my update. My oldest is old enough to drive, and we have started driving lessons with him.
The permit age and licensing age out there?
So he gets an instructional permit at 14, so he's had it actually since
what
July.
The actual fuck.
Yeah, hey, farm towns, agriculture,
farm towns. Yeah, I guess.
That's how,
and
I
to be honest
too.
Yeah, and so because of ag here. Yeah, they need, and to be honest, like farm kids have been popping clutches since they were eight, like let's be honest here, like
yeah.
They're doing it on the property. Like my first driving experience was on my grandfather's acreage in a minivan, and they basically said don't hit anything, and I was like cool. And they were like, you remember
what's the closest thing I can hit?
Yeah. Well, the nice thing is like he's got wide fields, and then they were like keep it under 25 just in case you hit a rut or something, like But what the point I guess I took away from it is so much of my youth was spent paying attention to what my parents were doing in the driver's seat, because I didn't have anything else to do in the car. I just sat there, and on road trips, eventually you read books and the inventions of laptops and things like that. You could maybe watch movies. We weren't fancy and didn't have the TV VCR setups in the back. So,
no, we didn't.
But like, as a kid, I watched everything my dad did while he was driving a manual transmission car, or everything my mom did when she was moving the van. Like, you're paying attention to that. All of my kids have devices. They all stare at the device. There's a
you have Wi-Fi in your fucking truck.
Yeah, there's Wi-Fi in a DVD player in the Suburban. So like, that, not a single person is paying attention to what I do.
Or they don't their even mom care, does.
No, yeah, they don't have a clue. Yeah. They're like, they're here, learning. Leave us alone.
More about driving from YouTube than they are from sitting in the car with you.
Exactly. The kid in the back's playing Forza while I'm doing this up front. Like, he didn't care.
Yeah.
Like, it kind of sounds awesome though.
Yeah. Well, for them.
Right.
The best part was driving to Montana like 2 summers ago, where we went out of cell coverage and even the truck didn't have a Wi-Fi signal, and watching their faces implode of like, what do we do now? I was like, you literally have 4 DVD players. Pivot. Mm-hmm. Stop complaining. Yeah, watch just pivot.
Yeah. Oh my God. Look outside.
Yeah. Imagine. Well, that's
the horror.
The number of times that I have called out things outside the vehicle to make sure they see something, like, my parents cows. Didn't do that because I was looking out already. I'd be like, hey, Dad, did you see the moose? And he's like, there was a moose. Like, because we were doing that. We looked outside the anyway.
Cows. So. I mean, it's a road trip rule. Like, you have to announce every time you see cows.
Not out here, you don't, because that's literally every 5 minutes.
I guess it is a territorial road trip rule.
I think so.
Ross, I got a game for you to play.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
It's called Hey Cow.
Right.
And you want to go first because you walk up to the field and yell, Hey Cow. And then you count how many of them there turn their heads. And it only really works great for the first person. And after that, there's always a dimension.
Yeah, that's better than cow tipping, which is as far as it gets around here.
Which that was last night, actually. My oldest had a wrestling tournament, and another kid was out there, and someone was like, that kid's been tipping a lot of cows. Because the way he put a shoulder into a kid and drove him to the ground quickly, you were like, someone's been training it's on horrible. Something other than people. Like,
horrible. Don't tip cows. We do not endorse cow tipping. It is not nice to the cows.
It's not a real thing. That's what we tell city kids.
In Pennsylvania, it is. In Pennsylvania, it is. I promise you.
Anyway, so I spent about 45 minutes to an hour with him behind the wheel of the Suburban. So like, we're not being nice. We're not giving him a reasonably sized vehicle. We're like, if you can drive the Suburban, you can drive anything. So,
I mean, the smallest vehicle in your household is a second gen Sequoia, which is
right.
Which is 210 shorter. Inches long.
Yeah. It's shorter. It's not 200 shorter. Inches long.
Yeah. Fair. I mean,
So he definitely has some things to work on. We started talking about being smooth. And I was texting my wife. I was like, I'm physically nauseous right now. Like, I might vomit because it's the jerky. I'm like, oh, buddy, it's just a smooth, like, let's go. So that was very
all the fears enlightening. For the EPS thing.
Yeah. I have some things that I'm going to do differently the next time he's in the vehicle. So maybe prepping him a little more ahead of time, trying to help him out. But I didn't know his frame of reference. Like, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He did not know how to do anything. I told him to turn right. And he was like, I was like, turn your turn signal to the right. And he's like, so down or up? I'm like, oh my God, you're a blank slate. Like, you literally know nothing about driving.
Yeah, you can either corrupt or endorse success as needed. You know?
Yeah.
Like, you got a lot of ways to go here.
Which the next kid is like, he's already ripping gators around and stuff in the neighborhood and on farms. Yeah. And so like,
I remember that.
Yeah. I don't want to put him behind the wheel of anything yet because he's ready to go. So anyway, that's my update. Let's talk CBI.
Yeah. So
you're way more interesting than our stuff, Nathan.
Real talk. Yeah. So, all right. So give us your, the way we like to kick things off with guests is like, give us your, you know, your elevator pitch, like your quick spiel about you and CBI, how everything came to be, what you guys specialize in and whatnot.
Yeah. Well, CBI Off-Road, I mean, we're a manufacturer, so we manufacture body armor primarily for vehicles, front and rear bumpers, roof racks, rock sliders, skids, you know, and some accessory brackets. Cool thing about CBI Off-Road is we're located here in Idaho Falls, Idaho, like I mentioned. We manufacture everything 100% in-house, which I think is a pretty cool thing, especially as a manufacturer goes, to be able to say that, you know, top to bottom, inside and out, everything happens here at our facilities. We've been around for quite a while now. My dad and I, this is actually a family-owned business. My dad and I own the company. And we purchased the company actually from a gentleman here in Idaho Falls back in 2010 that we were working with. Back in that day, we've always been motorheads and, you know, into cars, trucks, whatever it is, power sports. Back in that day when the Yamaha Rhino came out, actually.
Ooh, yeah.
We were customizing Yamaha Rhinos. So we
450s
were
having, and 660s. Yep.
Yeah. So we had these Yamaha Rhinos that we were putting two bumpers on, front and rear, whole roll cages. We were enclosing the bed, locking the bed, and putting a bench seat actually in the bed area.
I remember that. So I'm I'm in the truck world, but more so even in the ATV and UTV world. I remember there being accessory second rows for the Rhino. Before the Razor was even like taken off.
Yeah. The Razor hadn't even come out yet. And so that's what we were doing. And at that time, my dad had another business and he was buying and selling, specialty cars. So sports cars, hot rods, you know, custom cars, all kinds of stuff. And even doing some restorations and on the side was kind of this Yamaha Rhino project. And that's how we got involved, at least with the original owner of CBI. We had always been, you know, into trucks, of course, and at least here in Idaho, diesel pickups are big because of the farming community.
Surprising,
right?
All these farmers and people like that, they get these diesel pickups and they're souping the crap out of them, you know, and doing a bunch of performance modifications and
hasn't changed.
We were doing a lot of that stuff. And anyways, we ended up purchasing the company from that gentleman. And it was a small company. I mean, basically, when we purchased the company, there was the original owner who was, you know, he was the expert when it came to manufacturing and welding and all of that. And I became good. My job was to do everything else besides manufacturing. Mm-hmm. So I did all the sales. I did all the running around, parts grabbing, all of that. I did accounting, website. And we had some people that we would work with some of this other stuff. But that really was kind of the major beginning for CBI and really when we started growing and developing our product line and just working on our products and what we were wanting to put out.
So how many employees are you now?
So we are at around 80 employees right
Holy
now.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say 8.
No, we've gone from, you know, in 2010, it was, you know, just two of us to around 80 right now. And we're a much different operation. You know, back in the day, we didn't cut our own parts, for example. You know, they were actually, when we first started, they were plasma cut. They weren't even laser cut. And we weren't doing our own bending. We weren't doing our own powder coating. You know, we were designing and developing the product, but, you know, other than assembly and packaging and things like that, you know, everything else was outsourced. Today it's totally different. You know, like I mentioned to begin with, 100% of the process is done in-house. So not only design and development, 100% of our manufacturing, we laser cut our own parts, we bend our own parts, we machine our own parts. We even powder coat our own parts. Everything's packaged and shipped right out of our own facilities. You know, it's literally all done right here.
So it's like start to finish. You have the equipment to do it. Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I mean, you know, more times than not, we hear about, you know, pieces being delivered and assembled or
right?
You know, showing up and getting an etching on them, and that's how they right. say that they've made them in house. That's crazy. I didn't realize that, Chris. I don't know if you had any concept of that, but
I just know I like their stuff, and I was like, let's go talk to those guys,
dude. Same. So I mean, going back, you know, like 10 years. I mean, in the off-road community, you know, people tend to skip over the appropriate armor more times than not than they should. And I think even in the Jeep community, you know, if you want skids or rock sliders, it's like, you know, it's worn or not worn, ARB, AEV, and like another Quadratec, you know?
Right.
So a couple of questions that kind of stem from that. I mean, what really like kicked off the craze for the CBI parts? And also, what percentage of your sales go to Toyotas these days?
Yeah. So that was, I mean, you know, as far as the craze goes, when CBI was originally started, that was the focus, was Toyota products. And primarily front and rear bumpers. And even on the rear bumper side, that was a major component that we were really known for, was a rear bumper with the swing arm setup.
Yep. Yep.
And that ability to carry extra, you know, gear, whether it's your spare and fuel or water or, you know, a high lift jack, you know, those were mm-hmm. popular back in the day. Yeah. Everybody had to have their high lift jack on their vehicle. That was really the start, and we've remained really true to the Toyota market. You know, it's really our bread and butter, and has been since day one. And we continue to develop products, specifically for all the Toyota makes and models, you know, that people are using from an off-road perspective. I mean, we've branched out over the years. So like that last picture that Chris was just showing, was showing the back end of our ZR2 Colorado.
Exactly. Yeah. Here I am hunting for Tacoma. I got a Colorado.
I was behind a bison today, actually, with a whole bunch of shit on it. And I was like, oh, those are really cool.
It's, you know, and what's crazy is we started, so that was 2018 when we got our first ZR2 Colorado. And, just prior to that, we had started branching out a little bit. We made a few Jeep products. We make a few products currently for Ford Rangers and F-150s. We do the Chevy Colorado. We do some Subarus and, you know, some of the Lexus models and things like that. Yeah. But it's still a pretty large percentage of our sales are strictly Toyota. You know, that's our core group of customers. And they've been the guys that have been with us from day one, and, you know, building out their third gen 4Runners, their fourth gen 4Runners, their fifth gen 4Runners.
I remember in probably 2017, maybe 2016. I mean, one of the biggest problems with the fifth gen 4Runner is that you can't fit a large oversized spare in the spare compartment. And obviously, I mean, the same thing with the Lexus, you know, the GX, because it's the same thing as a fifth gen 4Runner. And everybody's panicking, looking for a place to carry a spare. And there were, at that time, I think maybe three different options for spare carrying and rear armor. And one of them was like a hitch mounted swing out, which I don't know if you've ever had experience with them. But
I have actually.
They're a good cheap solution, but they're better at like bouncing around and wobbling all over the place than they are anything else. The second is, you know, throw it in the cargo area or on the roof. And the third was a CBI product. And it was like on the 4Runner forum, it was like people lining up to get them at the time. It's really crazy how, you know, it's like wildfire in the off-road world. You know, we've seen the same thing with Max Trax. How did the tornado of things go from, you know, the world and of off-road community picking up on things to suddenly like SEMA builds?
It's just, you know, it was just a kind of a gradual evolution. You know, our products have always been very popular within the industry, and as our brand recognition, and and that has grown. It's just led to other opportunities, and you know, all of those projects, whether it's working with Lexus, we've been doing a lot with Lexus the last few years, done several builds for them, and also for Toyota, and then some other bigger names in the industry. You know, it's just kind of like everything, you know, it's collaborations, networking, and connecting. And, you know, when people like your product, they reach out and they want to, they bring these projects to us, really, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, all the projects that we've done with Lexus and Toyota have just naturally occurred that way. They've come through someone at Toyota or Lexus that's seen our products and, you know, talked to us at a show or whatever. And all of a sudden they bring us a new project, and it's pretty mm-hmm. awesome to be part of those projects. It gives us an opportunity to see some of the new and upcoming, you know, vehicles or at least the direction that some of these manufacturers are going. And it gives us some opportunity to be a little creative sometimes too, you know, and do something a little bit outside of the box and see how people react to it, you know, just like you're showing this mm-hmm. Trail Hunter concept here. And, you know, it's always good and fun to be a part of that stuff, whether people like it or not, because you always get, right. you know, mixed mm-hmm. Opinions. Mm-hmm. And I think that Trail Hunter is a perfect example of it. You know, there's a lot of people that just really did not like it. You know, they're sometimes I think people get upset with the conservative nature of Toyota. You yep. know, they're fairly conservative in their approach, and you know, there's benefits mm-hmm. from that perspective.
All right, but that's why shit works for so long.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's durable, it lasts, yeah. you know. And then there's the rest of us that sometimes are like, man, just put a twin turbo V8, you know, super right. high horsepower, right. you know, whatever yeah. in there.
Why doesn't the Tundra have the 5-liter V8, you know, that Lexus puts in all their fun stuff?
Right, like, right.
Yeah, it's crazy. So,
it just kind of evolves that way. And, you know, we're just grateful for the opportunity we get mm-hmm. to be a part of those awesome projects.
So you've worked with Toyota, and correct me if I'm wrong, you've worked with the Expedition Overland team as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We've actually worked with, you know, we were joking about this actually the other day in the office when Clay and Rochelle started Expedition Overland. Their first year, they contacted us and they wanted us to help with one of their builds. And just in my stupid thought process, I just didn't think we could do it. You know, I just felt like, it's just, you know, we don't have the time to do it within their time frame. And I just don't think it's going to work. So I told them no the first year. we kind of kick ourselves for that because they've done some great awesome things since they got started.
XO,
but we joined them for the second year and we've been with them ever since. And yeah. and that's been a pretty awesome opportunity as well. You know, those guys are I think kind of leaders in the space as far as mm-hmm. different types of overland travel and helping people understand overland travel and what it's all about and how each of us can participate in it.
Yep.
And it's been fun to be part of their builds and to work with them and then provide feedback and input for us. And, you know, it's just been a great relationship.
You have to parlay your way into like tagging along on a trip. Just be like, yeah, I'm coming along for product testing or something.
I keep mentioning, I'm like, you know, you guys keep going on all these awesome trips and I'm just waiting for my invite. You know, it's kind of a yearly thing. Right. I just drop a little hint. You know, hopefully one of these years you'll see somebody from the CBI crew on their trip with them.
Yeah. Well, we've had Clay and Rochelle on the show and Kurt Williams as well. And Kurt should be coming back soon. And man, it's good. Like the trips they go on and, you know, the way they put vehicles together is just, it's on a different plane from, you know, like anybody else.
Well, they're brand specific, but they never stay with the same one. Like it's a 4Runner, it's a 100 series, it's a Tacoma, it's
but when you're
Ram Prospector, like
backed like Ram by AV the Prospector. Brand, you know, the company, the way they it are helps. Like yeah. it helps but they're you
it's
know,
a difference yeah
but they I mean they got there by having that loyalty going into it, you know. They weren't running like I don't know fucking like Xterras or something and suddenly they're building, you know, Sequoias for Toyota.
Right.
But yeah, so all right. So let's talk let's talk armor. So obviously okay. CBI is, you know, predominantly known for, as you said, front and rear bumpers and skid plates and sliders and whatnot. One of the things I want to touch on here is the different materials that are used for the actual armor itself. So, I mean, we were talking about Yamaha Rhinos before. In the UTV world, it's gone from steel skid plates to aluminum skid plates to a lot of guys are running ultra high UHMWP skid plates because they're light, they're cheap, and you can basically use them as like an underbody slider, you know, like you put a vehicle on a rock and you can basically just like use the skid to move over it as opposed to just protect the underbody.
You're describing my old jeeping days.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, shit, your fucking TJ is more akin to, you know, the
side-by-side Razor XPs about the same are, size.
Yeah. Same really size close. And same price, you know. Are you seeing any of the same kind of like material developments and changes in the armor community, or people just asking for like, give me steel, I'll take the weight, you know, hits and that's it?
Yeah, no, I think definitely, you know, the off-road overland segment side of this industry has seen that. We've seen it just throughout our existence. You know, in the beginning, all our skid plates were steel. You know, and even some of the shapes that we put into our skid plates, the way we reinforced them, and different methods of manufacturing has changed to hit certain needs. So, you know, for example, most overland travelers like myself, I mean, I'm not out rock crawling and hitting super extreme stuff. An aluminum skid plate is a really awesome option. A, like you mentioned, they're super strong still. If you build them right, they definitely hold up. You save a ton of weight. It's dang near 50% less in weight than what
it's that steel, much.
Yeah, and what holy than what shit. A steel equivalent is. So wow. For example, if okay. you look at like our Tacoma skid plates, a full set of skid plates is gonna be around 135 pounds. The aluminum ones, you're going to be in that 70-ish range, you know, depending on which
that's,
Forerunner Tacoma. So yeah, it's a big difference.
That's a big difference. I mean,
huge difference on the weight side of things. And
especially with Tacoma owners constantly and unknowingly getting to the gross vehicle weight without considering it, you know, like that is the like trope of tropes in the Tacoma world.
Yep. And we've done the same thing even on the bumper side of things, because the way we can manufacture these parts in aluminum, there's really no reason to do steel, you know, in a lot of scenarios. There really isn't. I can think of a certain situation that I had in one of our Tacomas. We were down in Moab actually doing some trails down there. And you know how it is with more rock crawling type off-roading, there's a lot of scenarios where you are scraping over things, you know, just like you would on a rock slider. You're getting high centered on a skid plate, things like that. And I remember the scenario where, I mean, I just got myself high centered big time and had aluminum skid plates on, and we just beat the tar out of them trying to get out of that. And those dang skid plates, I mean, it honestly, we were so rough on them, it surprised the heck out of me, but they held up. And they did their job, and they protected all the components that they needed to. And, you know, so we did that. No big deal. Made it through the trail, and we're saving all the weight. We're saving wear and tear on the vehicles. To me, it's just it's a major positive all the way around when it comes to aluminum.
Yeah, I tend to agree. There's old school faithfuls for steel skids. I mean, the same, like, we talk up and down about steel cable versus synthetic line, you know, on winches. And there's people who outright refuse to run synthetic. And I mean, at this point in my life, I won't run you have to pay me quite a bit of money to touch steel cable.
That's
you know?
I agree.
So So it's interesting to hear that aluminum is A, that much of a weight savings, and B, maintaining the same durability. I mean, Do you generally do the aluminum skids in the same thickness as steel, or are they a little thicker?
They're thicker. So our steel skid plates are 3/16 or 7 gauge. The aluminum ones are 1/4 inch.
Okay.
So that's one of the differences that affects the strength on the aluminum skid plates. The other thing really is by way of design, and that's how we build them. So there is structural bracing, you know, where needed. There's certain, like if you look at that picture where we're looking at right now on the Tacoma skids, the bends and the wings, how we've engineered those in, those actually add a significant amount of strength. So as you're really taking, you know, high impacts in that front portion of the skid, that impact zone, it's going to hold up by way of design. And so combination of both of those things that really make the aluminum skid plate work and function the way that it needs to.
Mm-hmm. Are you generally proponents of like more one piece style skids, or do you like to break them down to front, middle, rear? Or just like do, I mean, I've seen, you know, people running like front bumper to the like transmission area kind of stuff.
Yeah. So typically our skids are broken down into three sections is typically how they're broken down. It depends a little bit on the vehicle. There are some variances like this new Tundra from Toyota. I don't know if you guys have seen this, but it's crazy. The frame mounting to where your bumper is and actually the front crush zone and everything, it's a mile away from where the skid plates start underneath.
Really?
I mean, it's like there's this huge, huge gap. I mean, you could fit people in there. It's so big. But anyways, you know, we just analyze the vehicle as far as what we're trying to protect from the bumper coming down to where the skid plate starts. And then part of the issue with breaking it up is in most cases it's necessary because of differences in elevation as you're running across the frame. And so we take advantage of those differences in elevation to create the seamless transition from one to the other. And that's the ultimate goal, right? Is you want a very well protected underbelly of your vehicle. You want to be able to slide over things. You want to protect, you know, those vital components underneath, and it needs to be smooth from that transition from one to the other. And so there's things that we do as far as we, you know, connect those and then types of hardware that we use. We even have, on the new Nissan Frontier, we have these little armor plates that go over the bolts to protect them. Because there's a few scenarios where we can't use a carriage bolt, for example, or we can't recess the hardware into the skid plate. And so
Chris, that was good.
scenarios you have to do that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Is the third gen Frontier skid any different from the second gen Frontier skid?
You know what? That's a really dang good question. I'll bet it's not. but we haven't developed any skid plates for the second gen in that we haven't test fit them. I know there's some of the components that are very similar, you know, as far as that goes, but chances are it'll fit.
Yeah. I mean, it's effectively the same truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually really like the current Frontier. I put like almost 800 miles on one. It was, it's a good truck. I mean, it's more comfortable than the Tacoma, which isn't saying much, but no, I mean, I pulled a trailer with it. I did some, you know, fire roads with it. It was a decent thing.
This Frontier with this bumper setup.
Oh, that looks so good. Yeah, it looks so good. I really wonder. So the big thing with the second gen Frontiers is the Titan swaps. So you swap like the front suspension and the knuckles and the axles and diff and everything from the Titan. So it basically beefs it up. So you have, you know, heavy-ish duty, 1500 stuff under like a small mid-sized truck platform. And if they did that on this thing, man, that would be so sweet.
Oh, I think it'd be awesome. And there are some guys actually that are doing it. But I've been impressed with this Frontier, actually. That truck in the picture is what I've been daily driving lately. And I would agree with what you said. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I've enjoyed driving it. I mean, I don't have any complaints, honestly.
Have the upgrades made the steering even heavier?
It's like it has the heavy steering. Isn't that funny? You mentioned the heavy steering, and I swear everybody that drives that vehicle, it's like the first thing that they say, like, man, this is heavy steering going on here.
I try to not read reviews of vehicles that I know are coming through before I drive them, just so like I have a fresh, you know, frame of reference or like mindset going in. And I literally, I when they dropped the Frontier off, I had to move it from one parking spot to the other. And like, I got out and checked the tire pressure. It's like, there's something wrong with this thing.
Yeah.
It's great. It's crazy. But no, they're good trucks. I wish the Titan was
as good as the Frontier. My experience it was going back to back to back to back to back, like 392 Wrangler, Nissan Frontier, back into a Bronco, back into a Ford.
Oh, really?
And so, like, that was that and the low resolution on the backup camera.
Oh, it's horrible.
I noticed. Oh,
it's so bad. Yeah, it's so bad.
It's like the Toyota RAV4. We have a RAV4 too, and it's worse than the Frontier. I mean,
really?
Like, what's the point of having a backup camera? You can't distinguish the curb from the garbage can, the whatever.
That's funny. I mean, the backup camera on my truck is. It used to be good, but now with the spare tire on the rear door, we had to extend the wires for the backup camera, and the resolution is half as good as it used to be.
You ruined it.
So, okay, so you're daily in the Frontier, but what is in your actual own personal garage? We always like to kind of get a glimpse into what people, enjoy themselves.
He said giant diesels. I heard that.
Farm trucks.
Actually, you know what? Yep. The only diesel we have right now is our ZR2 Colorado.
The baby dirt, the baby max. Yeah, those things are awesome.
Yeah. Yep. Normally my truck is the Tacoma, the CBI Tacoma. So it's a 2019 TRD Pro in that Voodoo Blue. And that's a fun truck. I mean, I dig the truck. It's awesome. Yep, that one right there.
Yep.
And my wife actually drives an Audi. She drives a Q7.
Nice. Okay.
She drives.
Those are good cars.
Yeah, we like. I mean, I've always been an Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche fan, and so it kind of fits the bill, but works for the kids and the family. You know what I mean? But
absolutely. Yeah. Well, definitely. And you guys experience real winter, so
we do.
Having some Quattro up there is a good thing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
Q7s are nice. The Q7s kind of faded into the background of the luxury SUV world recently, with all the other absurdity that is happening. But the Q7 is just good. It's just constantly good.
Well, and for a long time, like, that was the best SUV. Consumer Reports was like, just get a Q7.
Oh yeah, the first gen like broke the luxury SUV world. Like, it reset everybody.
I have an aunt who went through multiple Q7s. You know how Matt Farah has this story where like his mom had multiple Lexus RXs
that RXs?
She would like gift to people. My aunt was giving away Q7s to her kids. And
oh my heck.
It's like, because they were still good, but she was like, nope, I'm ready for the new one. Like,
yeah. Oh man.
Our first Q7 was that diesel, that TDI diesel. And that thing was a beast. That diesel in it.
It was a 3 liter TDI.
It was a 3 liter diesel. And that thing was so awesome. And it killed it. Fuel economy and everything, power was really good. I mean, that was an impressive vehicle.
Rest in peace, TDI. Oh man.
Yeah.
It's my heavy ride generation.
I know somebody that's TDI swapping an 80 series, and it is
that'd be cool.
God, that's the perfect guy. It's the right size, it's the right look, it's the right engine, you know.
And it still sounds like a tractor.
And still sounds and it probably mostly drives like a tractor, but you know, when you're not fighting, you know, 30-year-old electronics and Audi electronics, it's probably great.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, that sounds like a swap I don't want to deal with.
Sounds like a great
one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
It'd be a great engineering experiment, but I don't want to actually do that on my own. Like,
right.
No.
Hard. LS3.
Hard. No. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
So, all right. So you have any exciting trips planned yourself or part of the CBI team trip adventurer log?
You know, as far as trips go right now, I mean, we're just hitting winter hard right now. You know, we've been getting a bunch of snow lately, and and at least in our area, there's very few roads that we can actually drive that are snow covered because we just get so much snow. Yeah, that picture right there, that one was actually last spring, believe it or not. That's when we were spring. Out on it looks trail.
Dead of winter.
Yeah. We're actually going to try the next trip, and it's going to happen in January, is we're going to try to go do some overnight camping out in the snow with the rooftop tents and stuff. And we're going to try to do some skiing and snowboarding.
Nice.
So that's the next one that we're looking forward to.
Sounds cold.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's going to be cold, I'm afraid. It always is, but, you know, it's usually not too bad as long as you bring the right gear. You know, it's manageable.
Mm.
That's my favorite, like, God, what's, I don't even know the comedian, if it's Billy Connolly or something, but he's an Englishman. He's like, there's no such thing as bad weather. It's just inappropriate clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. It's wrong attitude, which I fully admit to.
Like the Nordic countries, like, still send their kids out for an hour and a half during the dead of winter. Like, just put more coats on them. Like,
right.
I've stopped telling my kids they can't. You couldn't get to work. It's too cold. I'm like, put a coat on, put a hat on, put gloves on, put your snowsuit on. I'm like, go, like, just go play.
That's how our kids are at recess here. It's funny, you know. They'll send every once in a while. They'll send a note home from school or a text, and they'll be like, "Oh yeah, it's gonna be negative whatever tomorrow." So we'll keep the kids in, but every other day they're out playing and freezing their butts off.
What do you plow your driveway with?
Well, my driveway is not that big, so I use a snowblower.
Nice. Okay. But
if it was a little bigger, I'd probably use an ATV or a razor with a plow on it.
I shit you not, I have had better experiences plowing a driveway with a snowblower than with an ATV. The ATV always makes like a packed bottom layer that
becomes ice.
Crushed. It eventually turns into ice. Yeah.
It does.
And then you're right. Going around with a chisel, smashing it into blocks so you can blast it.
I have one of those.
Yeah. Yep. Snowblower is the way to go.
That's why I prefer snowblower, honestly, myself, is for that very reason. It doesn't pack anything down. I can get it. I can clean it right to the concrete, and then I'm not worrying about, you know, ice and stuff on my driveway.
It is less fun, though.
Yeah.
Definitely less fun.
I can tell you it's more fun than shoveling, so...
Can confirm. Yeah, shoveling.
That's the problem around here. You get sick of shoveling. You know, right now it's fun because it's new, right?
It's only been a couple, 3 weeks.
Right. You get the end of December and we're only a month and a half into winter and it's like, okay, I'm sick of shoveling this stuff.
New Year's is just beginning the process for you guys still. Like,
it is. I mean, we'll get snow through first part of March usually. You know, and then it'll start melting. So
my drill is 40 feet and I shovel it once and I am done.
Yeah.
That's it.
We get about 3 to 5 like accumulations every year, but like my driveway faces north. So if I'm not out there immediately clearing it, it's going to be there for like the snow on the street is always still in my yard at the end of the season.
Yeah.
The north side of the street, they've been clear for months, but there'll still be snow in our yard, which is hilarious to me.
Yeah. We got an inch of snow Sunday into Monday, and I had the Lexus parked up against the garage, and I've been driving this Kia, and I went to drive the Lexus today, and it still had a full thing of snow on it.
Yes, like, did it?
Yeah. So, and now, of course, it's that crazy front that was moving through the country and dumped like 18 inches of snow in North Connecticut. I'm supposed to get an inch of rain.
Yeah, I was like, really? I got a crap ton of rain earlier this week. I figured that was headed to you.
It is. I'm in a room right now that is it's about 270 degrees of windows and it is pouring outside, but it is also it's 40 degrees and raining, so
you're good. You know.
Wow.
Glorious.
Still go out for recess in that.
Yep.
They don't do that.
Take your word for it. I'm not taking my 6 month old out for recess.
My kids' schools when it's raining, they're like, hard pass.
Yeah.
You can always tell the days like just after it rains because they're limited on where they can go outside. They're like, it's an only blacktop day. Like,
oh yes.
Yeah.
We don't want to send you home and get phone calls about why is my kid drenched?
Actually, they don't care.
Nah, they probably don't give a fuck. Yeah. Nah, I don't blame them. I don't know.
They're not good.
Playing in the mud is fun. This is an off-road show. We're supposed to endorse playing in the mud.
That's right. That's the fun part, right?
Yeah.
Playing in the mud.
I have a little girl who has a set of shoes that she switches into for recess. And then she switches back to her outfit. So
she's well prepared.
And right? Well, and to her credit, does a good job of not coming home with stuff ruined. So I'll give her good a little for props her. For the 4.5-year-old.
More than shoes. I can say for myself.
I have three boys that have ruined every pair of shoes. So it's a fun juxtaposition. The three boys that ruin everything and this little girl that's keeping
everything. Well, she's pristine. Learned. She's got three examples to learn from.
And that and little girls are different. So
that's true.
She colors in the lines better than multiple brothers at 4.5.
I'm
not talking about them at the same age. I'm talking about currently. The 8 and 12-year-old do not give a crap, and her stuff is precise. So
kids are different right there between boys and girls, huh?
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, seriously.
Well, sweet. We have definitely gotten close to our time for the end of the episode. Typically, we allow you to plug something, but I feel like CBI... I mean, we didn't even talk about Prinsu.
That's true, we didn't.
You want to go quick through Prinsu?
Prinsu is just, I mean, just, you know, really Prinsu is all about the functionality of carrying your gear for whatever you're doing. That's really what Prinsu is about. You know, it's the first low profile, modular, all aluminum roof rack. Lot of awesome things coming this next year with Prinsu. I can share there's going to be some brand new products, never before seen products. And I'm not just talking like accessory type things, but totally brand new products coming on the Prinsu line. And
that's exciting.
Same thing. You know, Prinsu's built right here in house as well. You know, it's part of the CBI family.
No shit.
Huh. Yeah.
That's awesome.
That's how cool. I found CBI was I found a Prinsu rack for an 80 series that I had.
Oh, nice.
And just never got to the point of being able to pull the trigger on it. I took the factory rack off and just never got to that next step.
But dude,
I love those things.
Prinsu racks are the absolute sweetheart of the 4Runner world. Like, that's no secret. I'm not breaking around saying that, but it is like the go-to.
So if you need a Suburban to test fit a Prinsu rack to.
Hey, there you go, man.
I will
we try to figure that out for you, don't we?
The biggest Prinsu rack yet.
There are not a lot of options for Suburbans.
No, there's not. And, you know, surprisingly, I mean, we do get that question on occasion. I mean, there's a select group of people out there building those Suburbans, and it's a great vehicle to use, you know, when you got a family and you need to get around and go have some adventures. Nothing wrong with it.
And your wife won't let you buy a minivan.
That too.
Did you make lift kits for Toyota Siennas? Let the record show.
That's a minivan.
I've seen some of those built out Siennas. There's a few online fucking that are pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, you don't want to go crawling with it, but like,
no,
it's, they're kind of cool. I mean, them and lifted Prius. Not Prius.
It's Prius.
Yeah. Also kind of cool. No shame.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yep.
I found some wild Siennas.
there's that one, like.
There's like the concept.
The black one on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The black
one. That's no more a Sienna than.
This is not that, though. That thing's ready to go.
That looks like some of these Subarus that you see out there, you know, that these guys are building, and they'll put a pretty wild bumper front and rear on it and lift it. And we've got some Subaru customers running Prinsu racks, and it's nuts what they're doing with those cars.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, the difference is that Sienna looks like somebody went, honey, I'm just going to take the wagon into the woods this weekend, and that weekend in the woods was the Gambler 500.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is the concept from Toyota that they built
a long time ago. God, those wheels need to be burned at the stake.
Holy and I'm God. Pretty sure the sliding door opens like a Falcon door. Like a
Oh, it does?
Door. I think it's a... Horrible. It lifts. I'll try and find one with a
window. Look at that, door. That rear trailing arm, though. Good God, that goes from like halfway up the van to the back axle. I don't know if you saw that, but that's the first time I've noticed it.
Oh, it's not, it doesn't it's open not good. Up, but it doesn't slide.
What does it do then?
A suicide door?
It looks like it just moves directly out. Like it looks...
Oh.
What the fuck?
That's weird.
Right?
Oh, yeah. It's
it just moves out on an arm, basically.
That'd be a pain to get in and out of that thing.
Yeah. The glory of concepts, not actually for real use.
Yeah, not functional.
Yeah. It's a SEMA build, right? It's SEMA ready.
SEMA ready. That's a good way to put it.
Yep. Just has to look cool. It doesn't actually have to do anything.
Yeah.
That's what I always laugh about at SEMA. You know, you get these awesome vehicles and they have wheels and tires that you can't even hardly turn the wheel without them, you know, hitting the fenders or whatever. I mean, they're just totally not even drivable.
Yeah. Like, how did you get it in the building?
Yeah.
They were doing the Austin Powers U-turn thing.
Well, you see that. I mean, I don't know if you guys have been there during setup, but you see stuff like that all over, or you see them drive in on wheels that they don't display.
They switch them out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've been to SEMA before. I've never been there on a setup day.
Yeah, setup day is kind of interesting to see how some of that stuff comes to be, you know?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
I did a lot of miles at a SEMA. They were like, hey, you want to go back? And I was like, I think I'm good. Like, other than to see people, like, I'm okay.
I want to walk 10 miles in one day. I can do it not in Vegas.
More.
Right.
More. 10 is a low day.
10?
10 is a low day.
I thought most people do like 6.
I think my highest day was like 14 miles.
Yeah, fuck that.
For that reason, I don't walk that much anymore at SEMA. I am very specific now with where I go. I don't do any extra walking.
Nice.
I don't blame you.
Yeah. That's wheel and tire haul was very interesting. So.
Yeah.
You see the song change and people come back to life. And I was like, oh God, this is sad.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, sweet.
Yikes.
I'm going to wrap up the show. You can rate, review the show anywhere you listen to podcasts. You can like and subscribe on YouTube. CBI's got a YouTube channel as well. You can follow CBI Offroad and Printu. It's at CBI Offroad on Instagram. It's at CBI Offroad Fab on Facebook. And it's CBI Offroad Fab on YouTube as well. And then it's Printu Racks on Instagram. I didn't dig deeper on Printu.
All the rest are the same for Printu. So all the social, you know, nice. YouTube, all nice. That's all the same.
Yeah, I freaking love those racks.
Got it.
You can follow Hooniverse, The Hooniverse on Twitter, The Real Hooniverse on Instagram. And Ross is not like the one from Friends still. He hasn't changed it. He's not going to.
Taking suggestions.
I have it memorized, Ross. Please don't change it. I know it.
Well, I'm open to suggestions.
After 143 episodes, I think I got it. And that might be the wrong number. And I'm at Overlanding Dad. And that's it. We've done a show. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thanks, Nathan.
That was awesome, guys. Appreciate it. Sure was awesome to hang out for the last little bit and talk about some fun stuff.